I sensed by talking to and listening, especially to Brother Jonathan Urban here today, that the thing of identifying special needs and whether a child has a special need and so forth can be a very big thing. And maybe it's getting overdone a bit. There's a ditch on both sides. It can be overdone where a child is labeled as special needs and shouldn't be labeled that way. But then I've also seen it where a child had a need that needed to be called a need and worked with as a need. I do not have miraculous techniques. It's my teaching of special needs children. I have discovered that when you read lots of books, of course they always tell you the miraculous stories and the ones that always did so well, but there are really no miracle answers that generally, if it's truly a need, if you click on something and they just get it, probably they're not a special needs child. The true special needs children, you are not going to see, you're going to work with them several years. And then if you looked on my handout on identifying special needs, you saw the growth curve. You can just look on those charts. Do any of you have the handout from the previous class on identifying special needs? There would be more back there if any of you want later. But I have charts of students, and I think I probably taught all three of those students where you can see their growth curve. And you watch when you plot their curve on the achievement test, you can see that they're making progress. They just can't make progress as fast as the other children. Their growth curve is below the average growth curve. But as long as that curve keeps in a general upward direction, I know that I'm making progress. And so when I look back, for example, my autistic boy is now going to be an 8th grader. So this past school term, he was a 7th grader, and he could actually sit down and bore through a math lesson. That was progress. But I worked from 1st grade to 7th grade with that boy. And it took years, but he got there. He actually could have enough of his own motivation to sit down and bore through a lesson. It didn't happen overnight. We work with them years. Now, my hope and goal for this class is that you can pick up just something to stimulate your mind with practical, common sense, little things you can do to help your child who is struggling or special needs child. If you don't have a tutor available to work with them, that you can pull them aside. Have another student pull them aside and work with them. Mostly it's just common sense. And I have a principal who's very much common sense minded, and I'll go to him with a problem with my special needs children and I'll say, you know, do I have permission to do this, or here's what I'm picking. He said, do you have a plan? Yeah, this is my plan. If it makes sense, he'll say, do it. Try it. So it's mostly common sense. All right. I want you to be my special ed children here for a little bit. I found sometimes that just demonstrating inspires teachers. So just please be my children a little bit. I will not act the same here as I do in my room, because I can't. I can't act like in front of adults like I act with my special ed children. All right. But anyway, this is review. And you see, with my special ed children, I know what they know and don't know. I know you know all this stuff, but anyway, go ahead. A short A says, ah. All right. Okay, short E says, ah. All right. And short I says, let's see if I can get this fellow to look right here. You know what it's supposed to be, don't you? A pig head, maybe. All right. Okay, and a short O says, ah. Let's see if I can do this here. But usually, I guess I have to cover those teeth up because you know how the doctor puts that stick in there on your tongue and makes you say, ah, to check down there and see if you have strep throat. All right, ah. And short U says, as in, and this is the pictures I draw with my little girl, as in what? Mug. Cup works too, but we used mug. All right. So now, the long vowels are really friendly, aren't they? And when you meet them, they say, hi, my name is... Long A says,
A.
And you can use symbols, or okay? And long E says, hi, my name is?
E.
E. And long I says, hi, my name is?
I.
And long O says, hi, my name is?
O.
And long U says, hi, my name is?
U.
Or?
U.
U. All right. Reviewing the sounds that the different vowels make. Now, I'm going to say some words, and I want you to tell me the sound you're hearing in the middle, the sound in the middle of the word.
You are hearing plum. These
e.
Match mine
I
came.
I don't want you to see my mouth, that's a giveaway. Now let's look at the words over here. Do these words look the same? What word should I use? It feels funny doing this with you because it seems so babyish. But I remember I'm working with a third grade girl that is still struggling to learn to read. All right. I have some words here. Do they look the same to you? Yes or no? Here, let's just divide this so that it keeps it. Do these words look the same to you? Between the two columns, are they different? What difference do you see? What's different about this column and this column? What's the difference?
There's
an
E on the end.
Oh, this column, there's an E on the end. And you'd be surprised. These special children can see things, and they can pick out these things. Yeah, there's an E here. All right. Now you listen. I'm going to say them. Do they sound the same?
Path.
Tape. That sound the same?
No,
it didn't sound the same. Met. Meet. Sound the same?
No.
So what's the difference? What are you hearing different when I say this column and then I say this column? Hear the difference? So you're hearing the difference between tap is
short,
tape is
long.
Did this fella here on the end say anything? Did you hear this tape? Did you hear him?
No.
I didn't either. I didn't hear anything. So he doesn't say anything. Well, then why is he on the end? He doesn't talk. Well, to help remember that, you can dream of all kinds of mnemonics, but I remember when I was in first grade, we would say, long A says A when there's company knocking at the back door. Well, whatever. But when company knocks at the back door, the friendly bow answers, hi, my name is, and you see, there we're going with the same pattern. Hi, my name is A, come in for tea. So that, whenever the company knocks on the back door, the friendly bow says, hi, my name is, and it makes it a long sound. All right, so then after you've discussed that, let's look at these words here. Is this going to be a short vowel or a long vowel? What do you think?
Short.
Why'd you say that?
There's no E on the end.
There's no E on the end. But special needs children have to be helped to notice things and helped to look because their focus darts around and they don't... And you just need to help them to see the significant parts. They don't look, they don't notice them. They don't see them. This one, short or long?
Short.
I want you to look right here where I'm pointing. Not at my face, but look. Right. So is this going to be long or short?
Long.
Why did you say that?
E on the end.
Oh, there's an E on the end. All right. And this one, is he going to be long or short? All right, because you saw an E there. Okay, and this one's long or short? And we can keep on going there. All right? And then I was going to have a line where I would have you circle all the words that have long vowels. Well, you can't circle them. They're not on your paper, but you could write off my list all the words that have long vowels. I'll skip that part. But now, I want you to write on your paper now. I'm going to start here. You write the one you're hearing. Of course, for my special needs girl, writing's difficult, so I wouldn't say write it. I would have a paper made the night before with stuff on it. I would say circle the one you're hearing. Okay? Can. Next. Wide. Crop. And next, cute. All right, which one did you write up here? I should put A and B. That way you can. Do you put A or B on your paper?
A.
Can. Yes, yeah, so short. Next one you put. And the next one. And the next one, that was every other one, but you don't have to do it. I mix it. Sometimes it's, I try not to have deliberate patterns so that they can't just think that I'm going through a pattern. Now, I would like you to spell the word correctly by the sound here. I'm going to tell you a word, and I want you to spell it. Follow what you were learning there. First of all, spell, you may see my mouth now, not. Did you put an E on the end? No, you didn't. Why not? Sure. Okay, let's try again. Note. Did you put an E on the end?
Yeah.
And of course, you can be dynamic with special needs children. That is, unless they startle, like my girl does. If I get too dynamic and excited, then she'll startle. And then she freezes. So I cannot teach her as dynamically as the boys I teach. All right. So that was a little teaching session. And of course, I might have a victory drill page that we could work across and help her mark the vowels. Mark the E's. Notice all the ones that have E and slice them out. And then drill over them. All right. So question one. How can we focus the child's attention in class? Maybe you can't when they're in. Some of the children I teach, the reason they're with me is because a teacher cannot focus their attention in class. They're too busy with their other children. And my autistic boy will just sit back there and just, he won't get much out of class. He just his mind keeps getting derailed with all kinds of things, and he just sits there. And the teacher can't keep after. So, but if you do have to, or if you're teaching one-to-one, or if you could pull the child up to you, how can you focus the child's attention in class? What were we doing? Keep them involved. Keep them active with you. But then their attention will still dart away. You can be ever so active, and it'll still go away. So I have creative ways of trying to get their attention back. Sometimes I'll just whistle with my fingers and call them back. Or sometimes I'll just keep repeating a statement. And you'd be surprised how long I'll have to keep. Sometimes I just keep repeating. And all of a sudden, we're out of class. Come on. And sometimes, since I lived in Africa, I like to say, come back from Africa, or where'd you go? You weren't with me. You went somewhere. I can tell by your face. I went home, or I went. And they can tell you sometimes where they went. Now, then sometimes I do use discipline. If I've really worked hard and tried to be tactful and creative and really struggling, and sometimes you just have to walk back there. Knock, knock. I told you to pay attention. And a little discipline helps. You got to be careful. You can't go overboard with it. They can't help it. And if you would knock them really hard, you think they would pay attention the rest of the day? No. And it would only last for 5 minutes maybe. So you can't knock them really hard. But just a couple sharp knocks sometimes. Okay, keep them active. Another thing, make them talk with you about what you are doing. I do a lot. This girl I'm talking about, whom I would teach a lesson like this, she cannot talk much by herself. She's mostly just almost nonverbal. If you ask her a question, it's just a one-word response maybe, and you can hardly hear it. She whispers. She just doesn't seem. She cannot cough well. This is why I know it's a disability too. When she has a bad cold, you can tell she wants to cough, and she starts choking. And I'll say, "Go ahead, cough it out." She can't. She will not do that. And so she evidently does not have the ability to breathe deeply and to get the puff to really talk. But for some reason, now I just said that, she will talk with me. If I talk, she'll gladly talk with me, but if I make her talk, so then we just talk together. I figure as long as she's talking with me, something's going in there. And so we talk and we talk and we talk and I make her talk. And I'll have the boys while they're on the board say, I am simplifying an improper fraction by dividing. Just talk with me. And while they're doing it, make them say it. A lot of choral work. It helps to keep their focus. Alright? Be aware of mental blocks and patiently help them overcome it. These children sometimes have mental blocks, especially autistic children do that. And the boy I had that was autistic one day, he was standing at the board and he was to be right. Of course, I teach all levels, so I'm mixing simple things and I teach all levels of students. But this boy was in seventh grade. Oh, he was in fourth grade math. He's a seventh grader, fourth grade math. But he was supposed to be writing the multiples of two. And so he was going 2, 4, 6, 8, and then I'm not exactly sure what he was writing. I'm going to write what I think he was doing, something like this, but that's not right. I'm writing the multiples of 2, and he knew that. And then he was just sitting there. He just wasn't getting anywhere. After a while, and this boy doesn't talk much either unless you prompt him. Autistic children tend to be socially isolated. But anyway, all of a sudden he just said, every time I get to 8, I think of the 8-times song I learned from my 8-times tables. Every time he got there, his mind would go into that block. And he would go down saying in his head, 8, 16, and 24, and then it's 32. And he couldn't go anywhere. So sometimes you have to stop. I was glad he talked because he doesn't always tell me what his mental blocks are, but he has them. And so then I could help him overcome his mental block there. Okay, question 2. How can we keep the child focused and engaged during study time? Anyone want to give any ideas? It should be a workshop, shouldn't it? Yeah.
They don't want to read the page. You have a 10-minute timer. If they start moving off, I just turn the timer over. And they know they have to read the 10 minutes. They see me say the timer.
It is amazing what timers will do. And I know there are people who have said, well, don't put children on timers or don't make these slow students always, they can't keep up to the fast ones. But if they time them, you're timing them against themselves. And with my autistic boy with number facts, I don't make a deal out of it. He has 30 number facts to do, and I give him the timer, and he's to write his time at the top. And the next time, try to beat what he did before, you know. And he times himself, and I don't make an issue out of it at all. There's something about a timer that just makes him feel a little bit desperate. And he presses on. Break down their work into small, manageable chunks. And you can do this different ways. They cannot focus on a lot of work. It freezes them. Their attention's dark. So with I lay his math paper out for him. When he comes to class and I give him his math assignment, he does not have to lay it out. It's already set up, everything, and you go. And when you're laying out a paper for a child like this, big and space. And then I put red lines across. 1 and 2, red line. 3 and 4, red line. And you can vary by ease and different. And I tell you, now those stop signs, when you get to a stop sign, come up, I want to see your paper. Now, I want to make this clear here right now, and that is because I'm a special ed teacher and I'm working one-on-one, I am not forced to keep that child along with other students and at the same place and moving with everybody else. So therefore, I just roll along with special ed. I go as far as I get and I stop, and the next day I take up where I stopped, and I don't have to go a lesson a day, or I can go a lesson a day. I can... That's a help with a special needs child. And so I do not require them to get a certain amount done. I tell him when you get to the stop sign, I want to see your paper. And then we will work till those problems are mostly correct. If one of them's not wrong, we'll talk about it, he'll go back, work again, and we'll work till it's mostly correct. Remember, we don't have to get the whole lesson done today. If he's not finished tomorrow, we'll keep on going. And The thing that's doing is, he is doing correct work. He's not, I finally got so frustrated and decided the problem is I'm teaching these children and they leave my room, go somewhere for study hall and don't focus and don't remember what to do. And they do a whole bunch of work wrong and then it comes back in 60%. It's just ugly and it's mostly wrong. And all that time they wasted doing wrong work. They have to do right work. So I started changing my program. If I teach their class, they do their work under my supervision. And they do not take lessons home. With special needs children, unless the parents want. If the parents say, we would like to help the child, we would be glad for some work, I would send it home. Otherwise, their work is done in my room. And when time's up, I tell them, all right, if you're diligent, when time's up, you're finished. And I have found that by giving them little chunks, and also about chunks, 1 year I just photocopied their math paper onto 11 by 17 papers, enlarged, and then I chalked them with the paper cutter. And I mixed them so that they're easy and hard were mixed. And so they worked really hard on the first one. Oh, the next one was a breeze. They could sit down and do it in about half a minute. Yeah. And I mixed what they liked to do and what was harder, and they got a break running to my mailbox, putting the paper in and going back. And I tell them though, there's only one recess. You can play single bass in my room if you like to. Or you can go out and play single bass with the others. But it's really boring playing single bass in my room. If you're diligent, when time's up, you're going to go out. We're not going to make you stay in if you're diligent. And I have to keep reminding them occasionally. But they soon learn. And if I do make them stay in, I don't usually make them stay in the whole recess anyway, even if they weren't diligent, because they need their play. And wait, it's 5 minutes, and then they go running out and play. But it's still reinforced that they need to be diligent. And I have found that when my children finally trusted that I was not going to crush them down with an overwhelming load, they became motivated. Anyway, but I still remind them. I have this little, when I'm working with my one child over here and the other is supposed to be there, 0 to 5, where are you? And I explain to them, 0 means I'm just not working. And 5 means I'm working as busy as a beaver. And they are, especially these children, generally are honest. And they have learned. And they'll say, I'm about a 3. Okay, could you bump that up to 4? And they keep on going. Where are you now, 0 to 5? I'm up at 5 now, or I'm up at 4. And sometimes they're just simply to keep accountability, just keep connecting. Train them what to do when they get stuck. Autistic children get stuck, and that my autistic boy, when he got stuck on one, he did not know how to release it. Well, all these other things you know how to do. Forget it, I'm busy right now, just skip that one, go get everything else done, then come back. And he couldn't do that. Once he got on that one, that just would grind in his mind and grind in his mind. And I spent a long time just trying to teach him that if you get stuck and I'm busy, just let it go. You have to have a program and teach them till they learn that. I have a little poem I made up and I had it on my bulletin board. And I made this up for some boys that needed a little help with diligence. A ready will can top the hill. A steady pace can win the race. You quit, you're caught. Clock's moving, you're not. Slow, steady, instead, you'll get ahead. And most of the time, all I had to say was, you quit, you're caught. Clock's moving, you're not. And they knew what I was talking about. And it was just a little poem I made up one time for something to do. Help with this problem. But my children know when I get tired, I like to make little poems, so... Number 3, how can we avoid overload and maintain the child's motivation? So avoiding overload, I was already hinting at that a little bit. Keep the child working on a successful level. I remember with the one boy that finally was in my room for special ed math, that was all he came for was math. Finally, by the time he got to 7th grade, we put him back into the classroom and he quit coming to me. But I taught him his math using the simple math. He was not getting his number facts. So I used simple math tricks. I did not use the curriculum. I used our school's math curriculum. I simply took the tricks that simple math uses for teaching the facts. And you can buy simple math at Grace Press, from Grace Press. And he became proficient with the simple math tricks. And he was diligent. By the time he was ready to go back in the room, he was working through his math lessons. And the first grade teacher said, we didn't think that boy had any motivation. Well, the reason he had motivation was finally he had tools that he was using and he could do his work. Of course, if he can't do his work, he's not motivated. Once he could, he became motivated because he was a trained child. He just needed help to get tools that he could work with. Give periodic breaks. I do that with my special ed. I guess you would call it a gym. We don't really have a gym in our school like out here. It's just a play area, we call it. And I just go out and run around the play area a couple times, or go through the hopscotch, or go out and stand up there at the top of the steps. I'm in the basement, and they go up the steps and stand in. Go up there and stand there and breathe some fresh air for a while. Or when my autistic boy they changed his medication maybe, and so he's... And I wonder, why is this boy falling asleep on me and drooling, and I can hardly get him to go? Then I found out a parent teaching me, oh yeah, the doctor changed his medication there, and he was... But when he's like that, sometimes I just take him outside. I'm about to take his hand, take my hand, let's go, and run, and then come back. Skip homework and subjects that, like science, social, unless that child loves science and that would be something that he would love doing, let him do it. But if it's, I wouldn't give him a Bible assignment. They get Bible in Sunday school, they get Bible in family worship. He can sit in a Bible class and learn, but he doesn't need to do Bible work. Cut as much work out as you can to focus on what's necessary. And push hard. This is one of the jobs of a special ed teacher, is to sort the curriculum. I only teach a few children, but I prepare every night. I'm busy every night. And what I am doing is sorting the curriculum. And I will say, for special needs children, I have found the best type of curriculum is the kind that's a thread system curriculum rather than a chapter-based curriculum. Foundational math is thread system. CLE has thread system curriculums. And I'll tell you why I like the thread system curriculums. Because you can chop them up and you can skip lessons, and there's a continuous review work through those curriculums, and you can more easily pick and choose, and yet the child is able to get what they need. And I've also learned that with math, I finally came that last year I was doing it. They should work whole math lessons. Cutting out which lessons you didn't teach. For example, in special ed, I forget Roman numerals. I teach them how to read graphs, but I don't make them draw graphs. And things like that. I have my lessons that I skip. Well, I say do the whole lesson. You might have to cut out the ones that they didn't learn. But what I've found is by doing whole lessons, they get the review that they need. So I don't make them do a whole lesson every day. They work at their own pace. It might take my autistic boy sometimes, it took him 3 days to do one whole lesson. But I just keep teaching along. I know where he is. I review and I go to the next lesson. And I'm actually teaching several lessons before where he's working. So he's always working in familiar territory. And I just keep moving along. It keeps it fresh. But keeping just working behind and working down. And every once in a while you find out, we're doing well enough back in here. Look, we can just, since there's so much review built into this thread system curriculum, you can just kind of all of a sudden jump them up and get them up closer to where they are. And they can keep them working. Skip the homework on a couple lessons. But chapter-based curriculum, it's harder for me. But I like the thread-based curriculum. All right. Now, question 4. What teaching methods can we use to help special needs children? Teaching methods. Well, we already talked about being active, keeping them active and engaged. But just remember that we don't need a lot of wild and exciting activities to help slow learners learn. Learning happens by diligent effort and thinking, and slow learners love routine. I have discovered that. The days where exciting things are happening are nightmares in my room. And the other thing that I find out is that toward the end of the year, it gets harder and harder for me. I move faster and toward the first 3/4 of the year, but as we get to the last quarter, we go slower and slower and slower. And I come home sometimes, and my wife has to accept that I unload sometimes. And she says, oh, but don't you remember that you were saying the same things last year? And I'm frustrated and feeling, oh, we're just not getting it. Oh, just remember, you said that last year. You'll be all right. This is just the end of the year. Give immediate feedback with drill. Immediate feedback with drill. So when I'm doing flashcards, I like to go out to the hopscotch. And I like to tell my autistic boy, all right, we're going to go through the jungle here. And, you know, the monkeys like to, and I know from experience that monkeys, they grow accustomed to people. I have experiences in Ethiopia, like, where you go to places where monkeys are used to people being. And that they will steal things. They like to steal your bag of popcorn. They like to steal anything that looks interesting. They're going to steal your wallet. So here we go. And so I'll give him a flashcard, and I have this little thing. I guess I'll do this, but if he gets right, I go, "Children with a star!" And he goes one hop on the hopscotch. If he gets wrong, I go, "Burr, check." But then these monkeys, alright, so he gets one wrong. Oh, the monkeys know you're in the jungle now. They somebody's in here. And we just keep working. I keep making them come closer, and now they're in the tree above you, and it just keeps his attention. We go through the hopscotch, but we keep, don't let the game, though, derail it. Keep there to be learning, not playing. They're in class, but it just helps him to keep motivated. But immediate feedback that you're right or it's wrong. And so they try again. And after a while, I tell them, I have drilled the answer so long to you the right way, and I never end on a wrong one. I always make them end on the right answer, that the first thing that pops in your mind is the right one. Some of the special ed children, we think, they don't know their number facts. Yes, they do. But the problem is, they say the answer, and I'm not sure about that. What if it? And they double guess themselves, and they hesitate, or they get sidetracked, and then they come back, and that's what confuses them. Usually, the first one they say is right, and so I say, put the first thing you say think down. I want the first answer that pops into your head. And they'll just sit there, whatever number, just the first number that pops in your head, and then they're surprised that the right one came out. Oh, I've been drilling these things correctly. It's probably going to be the right one, and sometimes the wrong one comes out. But slow down the pace of instruction. I'm not teaching special ed children. I'm talking too fast. And then I don't know how to term this. Use a little homemade psychology. Now, in our church groups, we have our guards up against modern psychology and child training. When I'm saying homemade psychology, I'm not talking about professional, but the God-given wisdom in you tack. A little charisma, a little wit, a little commendation, a little surprise, a little positive thinking. Whatever wisdom God gives you, it's the God-given wisdom, but just a little bit of working with their minds that help. Focus learning on patterns rather than rules. You notice I did that. The silent E rule is a very important rule for reading. When you read books about, well, I just was looking at Sally Shaywitz's book about teaching dyslexic. But the silent E rule is an easy rule to identify and to teach, but it opens up tremendous amount of words in reading. And don't make them try to remember rules. You notice the way I taught you, I was focusing more that it's a pattern. It's a pattern. And have them hunt for patterns. And rather than, let's see now, which rule is it? 1, 2, 3, 4? I don't know which rule that was. Just, they don't have to worry about rules. There are patterns. And it comes to my mind now, so I'm going to say it. And that is that if you have a child that's struggling, let's say, with his phonics and dividing his words, I have found it to give them pattern words. So on the top of his paper, put some words like, that have the same pattern as the words he's dividing, with the divisions put in there, and say, well, just look up there and match which one this word's like. It's a matching exercise. And I have found that most times they're good at matching patterns. Now, if you say, okay, you're to divide this word. Go up there and find which rule you use to divide this word. So all the rules are written out with words, you know. Go find the rule number that you used. That doesn't work. But if the words are up there divided, they can match that. Say, this word fits this one because it has an E on the end. Or this word fits this one because and it's divided between the two consonants. And make it a pattern-oriented exercise. Now, that was just my next point I see now. How do younger children learn? By imitating and copying. Children are imitators. They copy. That's how they learn. And so, if they aren't creative and they can't write a sentence, or just write sentences together. And they can't write. Writing's hard for them. They can't write a paragraph. So on Fridays, we did paragraph writing for my two older boys. We just did it together. They didn't have any ideas themselves. So I would put a topic sentence on the board. Now, give me some ideas about this topic sentence. Nothing would come. So then I would specifically ask them specific questions. Something about working in the shop. You know, I was trying to say what a topic sentence I had for the shop. Nothing comes to my mind just right now. But I'd start asking specific questions, and then they would tell me an answer. Well, now let's put that in a sentence. And we would build our sentences together, and they would copy. Well, you can do that every Friday, and they're helping you write a paragraph. You do that all year long every Friday, and they write one little paragraph with you. After a couple of years, they probably could at least write a simple paragraph. But remember I said years. I cannot expect the progress you expect of your students that you're going to pass on. If I did, I'd have to stay home in bed. There'd be no use going to school, or I'd be frustrated. And focus on the patterns, but then let irregulars just fall into place. Don't make a deal over the irregular stuff. It doesn't fit the pattern. Just keep learning what follows the rule, and if something falls in, something comes up that doesn't follow the rule, help them, tell them what it is, talk about it a little bit, go on. Don't drill the irregulars. Just keep focusing on what follows the rules. The irregulars will just kind of come in by osmosis. Teach them and require them to think. How do you teach a person to think? Special needs children have trouble with thinking. So what is thinking? Well, this is my definition of thinking. Thinking involves asking and answering questions in our heads, right? We ask a little question and we answer. So that was step one. Then I ask another question and I answer. So when I'm thinking, I like to think about what questions will that child need to ask and answer to work through that. And in foundational math, and if you're not familiar with that, it's a math curriculum that Paradise has produced and is selling. The Paradise teachers have written it. It's still being worked on. But in that math curriculum, when they're working their story problems, two questions they need to answer, and there's a chart on the wall. They ask those two questions and look at that chart, and they'll know exactly what to do. And that is, do I have like or unlike labels? Like, unlike labels would be items and dollars. Or like labels would be items and items. That's the first question they need to ask. And the second question is, am I looking for a part or a total? Do I want to find a piece or a whole? And if they ask those two questions and look at the chart on the wall, they're going to know whether to plus, minus, times, or divide. Those are their thinking questions. And a lot of times whenever they're stuck, well, did you ask those questions up there? No. Ask that question. Or help them ask it. And they can answer them. Just teach, emphasize processes and steps, and then make them do it. I find that a lot of times it's just they don't do what you told them to do. Did you read that problem? No, I didn't read that problem. Well, let's go back here and read that. And my one boy is very frank to admit. No, he didn't read that problem. He just grabbed a number of questions. All right, well then go back and read it. And I like mnemonics. I like little memory mnemonics. You can think of a little trick to help them remember. But like this girl that I would help with here, Rosalind's her name, so let's call her Rosalind. She was to be filling in the blanks between these numbers. So it was 1, 3, 5. And she was just to be filling in the blanks on her number paper. And she got to number 9, and then she put another number 9 after 9 instead of writing 10. So I erased the 9. Of course, when I say this, you have to remember that children with mental retardation act strange and do strange things. So she went over to her desk, sat down, and pointed. I had a number line on her desk or something, or else she was looking somewhere else. She sat down, pointed to the number 3, wrote a 3 there. I follow her sometimes when she goes, leaves my podium and goes back to her desk. I secretly just kind of pat along. And because she's not. She tends to be in our own world. She doesn't know I'm coming in. And I discovered that she didn't think. She just did something. She didn't do what I told her to do. So she wrote a 3 down quickly. And I just simply stop her and say, well, you just pointed a 3 and wrote a 3 down. You didn't think about that. What does come after 9? 10. Oh, well, 10 comes after 9. Ask questions about their thoughts. Ask questions about their thoughts. My one boy will say, I can't get this one. Well, don't just go say, oh, there's your mistake. The first question is, why do you think you can't get it? What are you seeing that makes you think you didn't get it? And my students have learned that I'm not an answer hand. I don't want to hand out answers. They come to me, I'm going to lead them to the answer by question. Why do you think you can't get it? And then you find the mistake, and you just keep leading them with questions. Why did you do that? Why should we do it this way? Another question I ask a lot of times, they'll answer in class. They'll just pop out the answer. Did you guess or did you know? And sometimes, I guessed. I knew. That helps them to think about their thinking. Highlight important parts to focus on. You notice all of a sudden, I said, look right here. Don't look at my face. Rosalind loves to look at your face and try to... And she'll look at me and not what I'm trying to write. Or as soon as I hesitate, they'll quick change your answer. They'll say one thing, and I'll just wait a little bit. And then they'll say the next thing, and I'll wait a little bit. And I'll say the next thing, and they keep watching me, see... And so I deliberately trick them. I just, after a while, you can't get it off my face. What is it? Show them what to focus on. And do not tell them what they have already learned. You notice when I was teaching you, I was leading you along and you were doing the talking. I really like multiplying mixed numbers with my older boys. I tell them, now, you see in math, each lesson is only a small step after the next, or at least in a thread-based curriculum. When you get to the next step, it's just a little step. I'll say, so we're multiplying mixed numbers. They already know how to multiply fractions. They already know how to change mixed numbers to improper fractions. So we're multiplying mixed. I said, you can teach your own self this lesson, okay? You're going to teach yourself. Yeah, that's not that hard. You can teach this lesson yourself. And so then I'll put this on the board and I'll say, what do you call that thing? It's a creature on the board. What is it? It's mixed number. Well, you know how to change that to an improper fraction, don't you? Well, yeah, sure they do. They know how to do that. That's 7 over 3. Okay. And then, so we put another one over here. What's that thing? What's that creature? Oh, it's a mixed number. Okay, well, I ain't changed that to an improper fraction. And so we go like that. And then you go like this. Well, now, you've done that before, haven't you? Yeah, sure. They've done that before. And I just lead them through and, well, you knew all the steps at one. You knew how to do everything. And then once I put the times pattern, it looked like something you already knew. And most times, it's just they don't think about it. I know a lot of this. It's just, I don't know how to do it. And you can teach yourself if I help you. And they love teaching themselves. And it's, be hands-on. Here's a little statement to write. Manipulation matures memory. MMM. Manipulation matures memory. If you teach special needs children, what's my time? I have to stop at 4, right? Okay. You should have play money. You should have colored cubes. You should have jars and colored water. And whatever you're learning and fraction things. You get their hand. Clocks that when you turn. You can buy these from school magazines. Or you can make your own clocks that when you turn it, the hands are synchronized. And you can have them actually playing with the clock. And just hands on. Or when we're studying perimeter, I'll take, before they even know what they're going to learn maybe, I'll take my boy out to the play area. I say, follow me. And we'll just go hugging along the wall. Of course, he loves to rub things because autistic children like physical stimulation. They crave that. So he rubs the wall anyway when he walks along. He'll reach his hand out. Hey, follow me. And he starts around rubbing the wall and just walk the whole way around the room and just keep rubbing the wall and into the little corner room wall. And then we get back. Well, what did we do? What did we do? Just tell me. What did you do? Well, we walked around the player. Yeah, we walked around the player. And then lead them into perimeter. But it was hands-on. It was a concrete experience. Or, you know, feel their desktop and talk about the surface. You know, whatever you can do to get them feeling and touching. And connections. The reason slow learners don't learn as fast is they don't make the connections that the fast learners make. You have to help them make the connections. Connect theory and practice. And connect to the student's life. That's another thing. For I have found that with my autistic boy, if I use his, he has some nieces. And he's very fond of his nieces. Well, I know that. So if I put Madeline into the whatever I'm working with, well, immediately, you know, Madeline. Yeah, he loves Madeline. And that, like, just connect, or use their own names. Connect concepts. I have found, contrary to what you would think, bigger chunks are easier for them to remember than small details. Connect concepts. And I love the older children, helping them to learn that percents and ratios and decimals are all saying the same thing. It's just a different way. And so, of course, I don't have time to show you what I would maybe go through to show them that, but I'll take Levon and I'll say, you're Levon Strike. So when I'm talking to your friends, I'll talk about Levon Strike. But if I meet an older gentleman at church, maybe one of your friend's daddies, I'll say, you know Dale Strike's son? Because they know Dale Strike. And if I'm talking to an old grandpa, I'll say, you know Roger Strait's grandson? Yeah, it's Roger Strait's grandson. So I called you Levon Strait, I called you Dale Strait's son, and Roger Strait's grandson. Are you a different person each time? Oh, no, you're still the same. Oh, yeah, you're just the same boy. I just gave you a different name. Connect concepts. Make them eat their peas, but also give them some dessert. Rosalind hates phonics. And she's struggling to learn to read. She would rather learn sight reading. Well, I finally humbled myself and said, all right, if sight reading's the way she'll learn to read and she likes it, I'm going to teach her sight reading. But one day it's sight reading, and the next day it's phonics, the next day it's sight reading, and I still think that some phonics awareness would be good. So I keep sticking it in there, and when we get to sounding out words together on the board and we're doing it together, she hates doing it, and she'll get a little stubborn on me, but I keep working at it, just keep making her eat some peas, because peas are good for her. But I just had to humble myself and say, all right, sight reading will be all right for her. Keep learning and practice together. In my class, my classes are short. Big, long classes don't work for special needs children. So 10 minutes of instruction, and then you're doing what you're working on. So we have class a little bit, then we work. Then we have class a little bit, and then we work. Then we have class a little bit. And some subjects we don't have study time for. Basically, math's about the only thing I give them study time for. English, we do it all together in a 20-minute class. We have class a little bit, do some work. Have class, do the next section. Class, and when we're finished English. That's what you learned today. No homework on that. You were working with me. And I have figured that if I can get a child to a sixth grade math level by the time they get out of school, that's sufficient. But I can't get them all. I'm not going to be able to get them all there. I get them as far as I can. But sixth grade math level, if I can get that far. And then sometimes, like last year, I gave my boy, he was finally to high school, and he had his computation, but I wanted him to get the concepts. I gave him a calculator then. Now, what about discipline? I need to get a couple minutes on number 5, discipline. Some of the adopted children among us can be a nightmare with discipline. You punish them and they might get angry and throw fits. And did any of you ever experience that with adopted children? Well, I have. Well, it could be another child, but a special needs child, or not? Yeah, I have worked with. Well, to tell you things I've seen would not be proper, but these were children that were adopted, and they would just throw fits in the classroom. And it wasn't that they weren't spanked; their parents spanked them. They supported the school, and the school spanked them. But they had a need. I finally decided that the reason we're having frustration with our spanking is that we're not understanding what the child's battling. Did I take away all discipline and spanking? No, I did not. But I changed my outlook on it. IV versus injection. Little bits continually versus a good hard spanking today and hope that goes a couple days. Just a little bit of discipline, a little bit of discipline, a little bit of discipline. And give them space. I learned with my boy that would get into a wildcat. In fact, this past year he stole when he was 15 years old and stealing. So he came down to my room, and I told him, it was phys ed time, I told him very calmly but firmly. And we had already worked on stealing before.
I told him, stealing is wrong. And I explained to him, this is going to happen if you keep stealing. And because it was a continuation, and he was as old as he was, I decided this time it merited missing his whole visit, 40 minutes a day. This was a serious case. And I said, it's going to cost you your whole visit.
Wham! Whoever went to Dustin!
Sorry.
And books flying and just
out of control. I've been through these episodes before with this boy, and we had made a lot of progress, so this was unstrained. Now, it was that bad. Now, what I do quick. One book ended up clear over at the window, and till I was finished, I finally went and talked to my principal. We already had some agreement that we weren't going to paddle anymore. He's too old to paddle at this point. We're going to call his father and send him home. So I called his father, please come get him. And of course, I've had a good report. I've been working with this boyfriend. Yeah, come get your son. But till that boy left that room, his father came, I said, I'll just let you take care of him. I'll be out here. If you need me, call. I'll be waiting. I heard terrible things in that room, and I found out the father wasn't really hurting him that much. He might not even been touching, but he didn't want to leave school. No, he wasn't leaving school. But till the end, he went out walking behind his father. That father had gained his trust, and eventually he got through it. But I had a broken desk lid, I had a smashed protractor and a broken pencil and stuff here and there. Well, now, what is the hope of this boy? This was the kind of stuff that was happening, and we made a lot of progress. We made a lot of progress, but it still happened under that extreme case. I learned that they cannot handle the pressure too fast. If I discipline him, the best thing to do is say, I'll put your name up on the board for phys ed. And then ignore him. Just don't even look at him for 2 minutes. Just go, you say it, turn around and keep on having class and just forget he's even in the room. And when you look back, you just don't quite look at his face and what's going on and just, and in about 2 minutes, if he has enough time to think about it, he works it through his mind and he finally can accept it. But if I say, and he might mutter, he might, just ignore it. You don't have to punish that muttering right now. If you want to work on muttering, do that. He got the discipline he needed. So, just let him go. He'll get over it and accept the punch. But if I said, oh, I put your name on the board and you were saying angry things, that's going to be 5 more minutes. And you know what's going to happen? It's more fight, and you're being disrespectful. Now I'm going to... What happens is, I finally concluded in my mind, they fight their battle on the outside that my children are fighting on the inside because of their handicap. They don't know how to inhibit their response. It just all comes out. My children are thinking some ugly things inside too when I discipline them, but they know how to inhibit. They can't come out. They know how to hold it in, and they fight that battle and finally submit. He's doing the same thing. It's just I'm hearing his battle. And for a while, I was hearing things like, I could kill you. And you're telling your teacher this? But by the time you're 15, to say I could kill you, that's a... And I just want you to remember, these parents trained this child. This is a handicap, all right? And I don't give up on discipline. I still use it. Handicapped children need discipline, but I'm doing it different. Anyway, finally, this past year maybe, or the year before, we were in the shop. We had just cleaned up, swept all the sawdust up, and these children like to flap, you know, they flap and flap and they fiddle. And he went over to the drill press and mopped and sprinkled sawdust there in my clean floor. Man, I just cleaned that floor up. He just messed the floor up. Of course, I was used to this trouble with muttering. We had made progress on it. And I heard him mutter under his breath, shouldn't have done that. Isn't that different than I could kill you? Something's getting through. And one day we were out running around the blacktop and we were having trouble with an issue. And after a while, he kind of muttered, I'm having trouble with bad thoughts. And the problem we were having was he's an old enough child now. He's struggling with purity. He's struggling with his mind. And he's still struggling to keep everything controlled. If you see him in my 8th grade room, you would think I had a 4-year-old in the 8th grade room. It's visible. It just seems like I have a 4-year-old in the middle of the 8th graders. Well, those are some thoughts on discipline, and you're dismissed. Any questions? I'm not finished. I didn't. I had a terrible big assignment. I've been working on it for years. But just, there's one thing I want you to remember, and that is, you don't need a miraculous curriculum. I do very little of having specialized curriculum. It would be too much work to get it through the board, to get it through the approval committee, and to get it fixed up. I do, at least simple, a couple little questions maybe. I just take the curriculum I have, butcher it up, doctor it up, and I make lots of homemade worksheets. That's why I'm always busy in the evening getting ready for the next day.
All right.